call the meeting of House Judiciary. Today is February 1st. I asked the staff, what happened in January? Nobody knew, but it's gone. And it's close to 1 o'clock. We'll call it 1 o'clock. President is Representative Thompson, Representative Keller, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Chair Gatto. We're waiting on the others, but we don't have to wait any longer because we have a quorum. For housekeeping, if you have a cell phone, put it on quiet. We're going to hear two bills, House Bill 291, posting notices at U.S. post offices, and I guess it should say not posting notices at U.S. post offices. And number two, House Bill 296, service of process on prisoners relating to the crime of escape, correctional facility, et cetera, et cetera. We'll hopefully hear both bills today. First up is 291, an act relating to non-posting of notices at U.S. post offices, sponsored by House Rules. Here to present 291 is Pam Finley, the reviser of statutes, Legal Research Services, L. Legislative Affairs. Adam, you have the chair. Introduce yourself for the record so Susan can get the spelling right for a complicated name like yours.
Thank you, Representative. Yeah, well, actually, the last name, my name is Pam Finley, and it's F-I-N-L-E-Y, no D. People do actually make mistakes with it. Thank you for hearing this bill. It's concerns, as you noted, the sort of non-posting of notices at United States post offices. Currently, there are four statutes that require various notices to be posted at U.S. post offices, and since 2007, the federal government has not allowed the posting of those notices. So this is simply to get rid of the requirement in state statute so we don't have this inconsistency. The first statute involves posting notices concerning controlled livestock districts. The second one is notices of sales pursuant to a personal property lien. The third is notices of sales for a consignee or bailee lien. And the fourth one is posting notices of sales for tax liens. This is done as a bill separate from the revisor's bill because if it is the will of the committee, we could do something other than just delete the reference to post office.
Post offices are on their way out. If we really get honest about it, how often do we go anymore?
So I would leave this to the discretion of the committee. What I have done here is simply delete the requirement of the post office. There's still a requirement of public posting and all that, but just not at the – there's no requirement that one of the postings be at the post office. And if the committee wishes to change to add something else, that's fine with me. But I'm in just deleting the post office, the requirement of the post office. I'm following a 210 bill, which did the same thing for a 2010 bill. I'm sorry, which did the same thing for sales on execution. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Just let me, for the record, we've been joined by Representative Holmes, Representative Gruenberg, and Representative Lynn, which is almost a full 2, 4, 6, 7 full committee. Okay. Negatives about negative effects of this bill are?
I cannot think of any. I think it would be a positive effect in that people who are wanting to post notices are not going to have to deal with the statute.
And the post office isn't allowing us to do it anyway?
Yes, that's correct. Just government notices. I believe the hope your packet has a copy of my memorandum, to which is attached a copy of the post office regulation.
Okay. Committee members, Max, do you have a question?
Just one. I know, Ms. Findlay, through the chair, that you can't put something like this in the revisor's bill because, you know, it's not just a technical kind of a misprint or something. And I'm just wondering, is there any other subject that would be like this that we need to take up separately? And if so, whether constitutionally we could put it into this, because it could be considered a revisor's bill in that it's a revisor's bill, but it needs legislative approval, basically.
Well, the revisor's bill is exempt from the single subject rule.
And I was wondering if something like this would be, if there are technical things, but they can't technically, under our rules, go in the revisor's bill.
Well, the whole purpose, I think, of breaking this out from the regular revisor's bill is to give greater notice to other people and to treat it like a regular bill. So since we're treating it like a regular bill, I think it would also be subject to the single subject rule.
Well, if I may, is there anything else that you've come across that we need to treat as a regular bill?
Not that I know of. I mean, not so far. I'm sure they will come up. They do from time to time. Last year we had a problem with the spelling of a drug in a criminal bill.
How come that didn't go in the revisor?
Primarily because it was a criminal bill, and we just didn't want to possibly affect people's rights or lack thereof in being put away on something like a revisor's bill.
If I may.
We may have been being overcautious.
Yeah, because I would hate to see us have a precedent that you couldn't even correct a misspelling in a criminal statute in the revisor's bill. I think that would unnecessarily complicate the legislative process.
Through the chair, Representative Gruberg, I agree with you. In that particular case, it was the spelling of a drug. And normally, if we run into a misspelling, we will actually change it pretty much editorially.
Sure.
But if you're going to be put away for ingesting this particular thing, then the spelling does matter.
The reason I'm saying that potentially is because I remember a certain bill. It was called Predatory Fish. And if you give the camel even part of a nose under the tent, you can come back with predatory fish. And I think that I hope we don't lose sight of the forest for the tactical trees here.
Through the chair, Representative Gruberg, we will keep that in mind.
Thank you.
We were severely chastised on television about the do-nothing legislator had time to correct the spelling. You know, the guy with the piano and... And I said, doggone it. Some people aren't paying attention. But I think it was because you could be... I never ingested the drug listed in the groupings. I ingested a totally different one, and the proof is that it was spelling was different. So we even made it retroactive, didn't we?
Yes.
Okay, Representative... my buddy.
My buddy.
I call him Max. Okay, Dr. Keller.
Could you give us some history of what, why the federal government prohibited it? I mean, were they afraid of presuming endorsement of non-public things, or what's going on? I resent when they tell us to do anything, and now they tell us not.
Right. I have no idea, through the chair, Representative Keller. All I know is that they did. Perhaps they were just having their bulletin boards overrun. I really don't know why.
Quick follow-up is I couldn't help but think of the fact that they're looking at closing a bunch of them.
Yes.
And in the small communities I'm aware of, the post office is a pretty important little...
Maybe the employees were overworked.
Maybe.
Representative Gruberg.
That reminds me of a story I don't think I've ever told you guys, but it was there was a trial that took place because a dog had bitten a woman. It was a dog bite case, and the victim was on the stand, the plaintiff, and the defense attorney asked her, "What was there about you that made the dog want to bite you?" and the other attorney leapt to his feet instantly and said, "She's not qualified to know what goes on in the mind of a dog." and the judge said, "Sustained. Even Royster wouldn't have asked that question."
Okay, we're sufficiently out of control.
Just the way we like it, Mr. Chairman.
So, you're not qualified to know the mind of
any more comments from the committee? Hearing none, public testimony. Anyone want to comment on this non-post office bill? Seeing and hearing none, anybody online? No one online. We'll close public testimony, bring it back to the committee. Any more additional comments? None. Representative Thompson, would you like to?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Chair Gatto. I move that we advance Bill 27-LS-1074/A with individual recommendations and attached physical notes from committee.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, the bill passes from committee.
Goes to the floor.
That's right.
Right,
heads to the floor.
Good.
Okay, we need a minute to fill out all the important forms here.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it, Chet.
We're going at ease? What are we doing?
At ease.
Yeah. At ease, yeah.
Okay.
Shut the red light. We're back on the record. Next is House Bill 296, an act relating to service of process on prisoners relating to the crime of escape, relating to the definition of correctional facility, amending Rule 4, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure, and providing for an effective date. This is sponsored by the House Judiciary Committee.
Woo-hoo.
But I don't think anybody's going to comment. So, would you? Annie?
I would like to testify. Yes, I'm sorry. I forgot to say.
Do you want me to introduce the bill?
You can. Yeah.
Okay.
This,
Mr. Chair, this is the bill that resulted from our decision to deal with two cases that came out. And these were cases that we took up in the summer hearing. One was Bridge v. State, which dealt with somebody who walked away from a halfway house. And he was charged with, I think, driving without a license. I should defer to the attorney who represented the state in the case, but my recollection, it was driving with a license suspended. And he couldn't make bail on that misdemeanor. And so they jailed him, and then he was allegedly not much of a security risk, and he walked away. And he was originally charged with second-degree escape, which is a Class B felony, punishable up to 7 years, about to 10 years. They said because he was not in a secure facility, the Court of Appeals, he could not be convicted of that. He had been convicted of it. He could only be convicted of fourth degree escape, which would cover somebody who was a misdemeanor in a non-secure facility. And the purpose of the bill, we could have gone the other way and said, well, he can be convicted of a Class B felony, but at least I felt it was more appropriate to go with the majority of the Court of Appeals and just codify that decision. It was a 2-1 decision. And so it makes it clear that a person in that situation who's in a non-secure facility and in for a misdemeanor could only be charged with a class, a fourth degree assault. And so that's the first thing the bill does. And the other thing it does is deal with a case called Hertz versus Carruthers, where they said that because a correctional officer is not a peace officer within the meaning of Civil Rule 4, correctional officers cannot serve process on prisoners. And there's a statute that covers that. However, the statute doesn't say it amends Civil Rule 4. It wasn't passed with a 2/3 majority. And I think I'm partly to blame again because I was co-chair of the Judiciary Committee when that bill was passed, and we didn't do it as an indirect court rule amendment. So this bill also makes it clear that the superintendent of the institution can designate somebody and serve process, and it does amend Civil Rule 4. It'll take a 2/3 vote. I don't think either of those provisions would be particularly controversial, although the Department of Law and Corrections, who will testify, still need to work out some of the details in Sections 3 and 4 in the bill. And they need to cure a problem, which apparently is a collateral consequence of this, that may allow somebody who is convicted of fourth degree escape, who's walked away, to still get good time. And they shouldn't be permitted to get good time if they've escaped. I mean, that seems to me pretty non-controversial. So they're going to have to come up with something on that. And what was the fourth thing?
The definitional change.
Yeah, but there's something else, a fourth thing that we're going to do. Anyway, there is something. But we have amendment number D2, which I handed out, that will deal with one of the things in the booklet, which was we have a bill, a new law now, that allows the judge to have as a condition of sentencing for a gang member that they have an electronic monitor. That bill passed with a lot of support a few years ago, but it had a 2-year sunset, a repeal, and this amendment D2, which I'll offer as D1, as amendment number one, Mr. Chair, repeal the repealer, and people have it in front of them at the appropriate time. I'll offer the amendment, but it's our intention to take testimony from the two departments today and then hold the bill over potentially till a week from Friday, when they should have these other things done, and we'll come back with a final CS and be ready to go on the bill.
By the way, online, Doug Gardner, are you online? And Quinlan?
I am. I am.
Just for answering questions?
I hope so.
And Quinlan Stein, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
But you're there to actually testify?
Yes.
Okay, hold on.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
Okay, if I can, I'd like to ask Representative Gruenberg, can you tell me why we had an initial repealer for 2 years, what the original, not being here? I'd like to just kind of know what the thought process was in there.
The real reason.
Oh, okay.
As Walter Wiltshire would say, or whatever he used to say, we had a person sitting in the chair 2 years ago, mm-hmm. put it on. I'll leave it at that.
All right.
I hope I'm not mistaking any of you folks who were here at the time. I think it was just, I'll leave it at that.
That's far enough. Yeah.
That's, we don't need to go any deeper. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Normally it would not have. It would have been permanent.
Okay. Any more testimony from the body?
For younger people,
Representative Lynn?
Walter Wiltshire.
Representative Lynn?
They don't know that.
Oh, yeah. The difference between Walter Wiltshire and a yam. A yam's a sweet potato, but Walter Wiltshire is only a commentator.
Oh, very good.
It's one of the worst jokes I've ever heard.
A yam is not a sweet potato, by the way.
Okay.
So, aside from that. Okay, we're getting out of control again.
Yes.
So, we're done with the testimony from the committee. We'll go to public testimony. We'll start with Quinlan Steiner. Quinlan, would you like to introduce yourself and give your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. With regard to this bill, which addresses a recent decision from the Court of Appeals, and it appears an attempt to codify the result of that case, it actually goes a little bit further than I think the holding of the case does. And it actually hits an issue that the court warned about, which is some of the unintended consequences that would occur if you broaden the definition of correctional facility. And that's what Section 4 does of this bill. It broadens the definition of correctional facility to a degree that impacts a lot of other statutes in the criminal code, potentially. And that's the issue that I'd like to bring to attention. The committee, in particular promoting contraband, would be extended to places like camps, halfway houses, group homes, or other placements. And that would create possibly a substantial increase in criminal prosecutions for bringing things like tobacco in to the facility, where now it might be just a facility violation that would get kicked out of the facility, perhaps go back to jail, perhaps a parole or probation violation. You'd actually be able to charge a new crime. There may possibly be other impacts throughout the criminal code. That was one that I'd found. And so that's a great concern for the agency. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about it.
You have some questions?
Oh, yes.
Let's wait for you to get back to your microphone. Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to hear from Ms. Carpinetti and Ms. Houston on exactly that point. That was not our intent. And what Mr. Steiner's talking about, folks, is on Section 4, the statute that's being amended. It should not be AS 1181-900, which is general definition throughout the criminal code. We're going to narrow that, and it may be, in fact, unnecessary to even have Section 4 in. But that's one of the main reasons we need the additional time. And Mr. Steiner, through the chair, we will definitely cure that problem. And by the way, the other thing that I forgot, the other thing that's going to take a little bit of time, is we've been talking, we had a conference call, the two departments in my office a few minutes ago, and I know Ms. Carpinetti's going to talk to Mr. Steiner a little more on this, because we'll get your input on this too, Quinlan, but that we're thinking of putting a purposes section or a letter of intent that specifically says it's our intent to codify the Bridge case so that everybody knows what we're doing. We're not trying to change anything. If we could get the two departments up here.
Ms. Carpinetti.
Do you want to have Ms. Houston up at the same time?
There. Why not? Why don't you both come up? Grab an extra chair and share a microphone. On the record.
My name is Annie Carpinetti. Excuse me, I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law.
Leslie Houston, Director of Administrative Services with the Department of Corrections.
Got it. Proceed.
Maybe I'll go first. I appreciate your addressing this issue. I was one of the lawyers on the appeal. I wrote the brief, but we lost. And that does not necessarily mean that that's such a completely bad thing. But this does clarify the Bridge case, and we would, you know, if you're going to do it, we agree with Representative Gruenberg that it would be a good idea to have a letter of intent explaining that or specifying that. Our main concern is the same as Mr. Steiner's, and that is Section 4, and that is the definition of correctional facility. There's been a definition of correctional facility in Title 11 for many years, and it's different from the one in Title 33. And the Title 33 is broader, and I'm no expert in Title 33, but we do have people in our department who are, and I think we really need to think about the effect of what the bill does is it brings over many of the facilities that are defined as correctional facilities in Title 33 into Title 11. And we really need to make sure that there aren't consequences that we don't like or we're not expecting. And I did a little computer search of the term correctional facilities, and I came up with 4 pages of references to correctional facilities. And I think every one of them needs to be looked at to make sure that we're not doing something that we don't want to.
A reasonable person might believe that a correctional facility is a place where some correcting actually happens. If you're just warehousing someone till they reach their time when they can be released and no correcting is going on, we should be wary about calling that a correctional facility. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, that's really interesting because when you warehouse somebody, I assume that they're the most dangerous people that may not at some point get out. I think you're right. We should be treating people and trying to correct them when they're
I was thinking of the least restrictive facility where, you know, they've got a week to go, they're in this facility holding a house or something, and nobody's trying to correct anything. If we call it a correctional facility, it falls under certain rules then, am I correct?
Yes.
You mentioned smoking.
Well, yes, it depends on, that's why the definition is so important. And I hesitate to change definitions unless I'm sure I understand exactly why we're doing it, especially in this area, which is really complicated, I have to say. After researching that case and doing that brief, I thought it was a lot more complicated than I had expected the area of the law to be. And let's see if there's anything else. I think that's our main concern. I think also it might not be a bad idea to look at the definition of secure correctional facility. And I think this is a good reflection of what the court said in its decision in Bridge. But I think it might it might help to have a little tweaking on it, because as I read it, I think a lock on the front door would be would make it a secure correctional facility, and I don't know whether that's exactly, you know, that's a construction fixture. Maybe there isn't a better way to say it, but I would like to think about that might be something else we could say. You know, I don't mean to be critical, I mean, but because these are hard to do.
That's what our job is.
Well, you know, I know how hard it is to do these, because I do them myself sometimes, and I think this is a really good start. I would just like to have the chance to do some tweaking on it if there isn't a better way to say it.
They use the word, add the word secure, and that point, right, we don't even know what the definition of secure is, and you're saying a lock on the door? Is that secure? Anybody could unlock a door, and now it's insecure.
Well, you know, the whole point is that you're defining secure correctional facility, and we like the fact that you're doing it just in this statute, in this bill, so that, you know, so it's limited in its effect. But we need to, I don't know, it just, there are a few things that we'd like to look at before we take a position on whether this is the best way to define it. Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what Ms. Carbonetti was talking about, of course, was Section 3. I just wanted to say one thing on the letter of intent versus purposes. I think, given the number of lawyers who will look at what we're doing here across the state in the future, I think it'd be better to have it in a purposes section, because they'll never see a letter of intent, I'm afraid. And the final thing I wanted to mention, and of course, when you testify, Ms. Houston, one of the things you'll probably I wanted to ask two questions. Number one, I'm going to call. Could we label this as Amendment 1 for purpose of the discussion?
Yeah, fine.
I'm not going to offer it yet.
The amendment we have, we'll call it Amendment Number 1.
Does the Department of Law have
D2.
Two? Sorry?
Label D2. D.2.
Right. Having heard my introduction of the amendment, does the Department of Law have any problem with Amendment 1?
Mr. Chairman, no. We don't.
And finally, we had talked about the problems potentially with good time. Do you want to talk to that also, as well as I'll ask Ms. Houston the question?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, one of the things that concerned our department with the bridge decision is that, and actually the dissent in that decision was based on this fact, that the decision in Bridge turned on not a definition of confinement, of the term confinement, because that isn't defined, but the court described what that meant in terms of the escape statute. And they found that a person who was in North Star Center, like Mr. Bridge was not confined for purposes of the definition of correctional institution, and therefore for the purposes of escape in the second degree. On the other hand, the Court of Appeals has held that a person who, under certain circumstances at least, who is in a place like North Star Center is confined for purposes of the good time statute. So a person is entitled to get credit for good time for the time they spend there. And that that is a concern to our prosecutors, and we would like a chance to look at it and maybe come up with a suggestion for you.
Mr. Chair.
Sounds good. Representative Grunberg?
Yeah, that would be at least one potential thing. Would be to amend the good time statutes to say if you walk away from a halfway house or whatever, you can't get a good time. You know, so we're going to look at that legislatively too as part of the bill.
Do you have comments?
No, sir.
None? You had a lot yesterday.
I did have a lot yesterday. But at this point, you know, I think the departments are aligned and working with Representative Grunberg to address some of the concerns as we go forward. But otherwise, the department is supportive of this.
May I inquire?
So one would guess that Goose Creek is a secure correctional facility?
Very much so, sir.
And some home two blocks from here, we're just keeping somebody there because it's expensive to keep them somewhere else, is a non-secure correctional facility.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's one of the things that, as through the definitions that we have to get to, is in a community residential center, what we call a halfway house, which is actually a fairly critical component of reentry, that they don't leave the walls of a prison just onto the street. You know, at this point, they're under supervision of staff at the correctional center, or at the community residential center, And, you know, if that staff person isn't standing by the door and turns their back and the guy walks away, again, you know, it's part of that definition of secure. And, you know, and so, yes, you know, we take it seriously, but at the same time, if you've got a guy that's basically in there for one more week and is, poses no risk to the community, you know, the department isn't going to go to great efforts to search that person out.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On amendment number one, does the department have an objection to amendment number one on the repealing the repealer?
Thank you. No, sir.
Okay. And I just one final thing. Since we will probably be talking about good time, and this amendment one hopefully will be in the bill, I would like you folks, if with the chair's permission, to be prepared to talk a little bit to the committee on the way the Court of Appeals has handled the issue of good time for people who are under house arrest. I think that's something we've not discussed, particularly in this committee recently, and I'm not saying it needs anything, but just by way of explanation, or maybe you can say today if you're prepared, if you're under a house arrest electronic monitoring, do the good time statutes apply to that, or do you want to talk about that next time?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that you get good time for being at home under electronic monitoring, but I would like to double check that.
I just wanted that on the record, and you can correct that if that's wrong next time. We don't need more than that. I just wanted you folks to know.
It's puzzling to me why that wouldn't be considered good time. If they're obeying the law, they're wearing a bracelet, they're not violating it, you're not finding them, you know, in the other end of town at a bar, why would that not be considered good time? I mean, there's no motivation for them if you don't give them... This is, counts as good time if you behave.
Uh-huh. Through the chair, I think that the rationale of the legislature has been that a person at home is under a good deal less restraint and is in a much nicer situation than a person in jail. And the good time statutes, I think, were originally adopted to encourage people to behave themselves in correctional in jails. And it's a tool for the people who run the jails, and it's an important incentive for people who are in jails.
Well, my thoughts are I'd like to relax some of the requirements of jails, who ever-increasing budgets, more and more people incarcerated, building prisons. If we can find a way to lessen the load on the jail, that seems innocuous to me. It's worth a consideration anyway. I'm getting a lot of yeses. Yeah. From right there. Representative Pruitt?
Well, and just the only comment I'd have to that on if we applied the good time to the at home, I think my view would be probably good time, you're being monitored, so there's someone that can see if you're doing good time, where otherwise it's just an assumption. And it's probably not fair to the people that are in prison trying to get the good time for someone that's outside to just automatically receive it, basically. And that may be a clarification
through the chair.
Hold on. I was thinking perhaps when you're in prison you can look forward to halfway house and good time from that. I mean, you have to do your analysis, and you have to pay for it if you're at home every week or every whatever?
Mr. Chairman, I think it depends on what you're at home for or being monitored for. I don't think everybody has
and
a year analysis.
And does the monitor have a GPS that says we know where you are?
Mr. Chairman, I would have to find that out. I don't know the answer to that.
Is that a yes?
It is correct. And again, there are various types of electronic monitoring bracelets, and depending on the courts and the crime, of which type they have. Excuse me, if the individual has serious alcohol problems, there's an alcohol sniffer. If, you know, it's that the courts or the supervisors of probation wish to know the activities of this individual, it's got a GPS monitor to go with it. And you're correct that they do pay for this. It's a sliding scale based on income. It can be as much as $14 a day. And again, based on income, they do pay $10 for your analysis.
Oh, is that once a week, your analysis, plus the $14 a day just for having a bracelet?
You know, again, Mr. Chairman, I think the frequency of your analysis would depend on the release of the inmate.
Compared to the cost of incarceration, this is a bargain.
this is cost-effective compared to having someone in a hard-bed prison, yes.
Okay. Did you get yours answered?
Yeah, although I think Representative Gruenberg may have had a point to it.
If I may, through the chair. As I understand it from our conversation a little while ago, a good time under current law is discretionary with the Department of Correction. Is that not right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, that's what somebody described it. I remember hearing that and disagreeing with it because it's mandatory good time. It's mandatory under the law. Everybody gets it. You can lose it if you don't behave yourself, and then it's up to the people who are on the disciplinary committees to decide whether or not it will be taken away. But it's mandatory that you get it. Everybody gets it except a very few. For example, people who are convicted of murder of a police officer or offenses like that, they don't get good time. And certain sex offenders who are repeat serious sex offenders don't get good time, but everybody else does. And it's mandatory. That means everybody gets it, and it's mandated by law.
Mr. Chair, with that, I was going to say if it was discretionary, I could, just for the committee's use, draft a proposed amendment up to the bill. But I don't think I'm prepared to do that because different people on the committee feel different way, and I don't know enough about this. But if anybody wants me to help on that, either way, please contact me in my office, Miles, and we'll just get something drafted, and then we can or work with the departments to see what they want to do. I'm offering my services. Just up to you.
By the way, did you want to offer amendment number one?
Could I?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move amendment one.
Amendment number one is offered. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one is adopted. Are there additional amendments anyone wants to offer?
I am not offering the other amendment.
Got it.
That's version okay. D.2.
It's D.2, right.
That's amendment one.
Yeah.
I'm not offering D.1. That is the subject of a separate bill that has already passed out of committee. And when I spoke with Mr. Svobodny about rolling that into here, it was just for ease in getting one bill, too, rather than...
Okay.
He said, no, let's keep that separate, so I'm not offering it.
So the plan, if everyone is okay with this, is to hold this bill till Friday?
A week from Friday.
A week from Friday. Oh.
Yeah. Now, let me just ask you, given the short session, would it be possible to get it done even by Wednesday or anything?
I would certainly try. But, you know, it's a collaborative thing.
It'll be under bills previously heard. If we don't make a Wednesday time, we'll shoot.
Right. We'll do our best.
I don't want to rush it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I shouldn't have even asked that.
Can you offer something to extend the session beyond the 90 days?
I would love.
You would love to do that.
That would be something that you can take up in the other caucus, in your caucus.
Got it.
Oh, and by the way, I'm going to have a memo that says the bill with Amendment 1 does not violate the single subject rule, and I'll make certain that whatever else we put in here is okay. I don't want to hand this out yet because I haven't read the opinion.
Got it.
But I will distribute it.
Any other comments from either the committee or the public? Anyone want to testify on the air or in the audience?
Thank you.
Seeing and hearing none, we are adjourned.